Hey, thank you for joining this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura, your host, and thank you for joining us today. Today we have Matthias Jacobson joining us, and he is the creator of Think Clearly. Think Clearly is an awesome website. Check it out. It's Think Clearly, all without vowels. He's got all sorts of cool stuff on there, clarity cards, a newsletter with these drawings. We talk about it in this episode, but it's an incredibly artistic, creative, amazing way of demonstrating the complexities of life behind business. Matthias is somebody who is an executive coach, but he also used to do digital work for the New York Times, Bloomberg, Google, Coca-Cola, all sorts of companies, and working with startup CEOs and corporate executives. But he also has a platform called Think Clearly. But what he really wanted to get across was less about where you worked and what you were doing and much more about the mindset behind it. He's really interested in the idea of how flexible people can be and how they can change and be and do anything they want. His work really reflects it. He is super interesting and fascinating. I loved chatting with him. I think you're going to learn a lot about answering this dreaded question, what do I want? How do I get there? How do I tackle the purpose question and the finance question? What does that look like in real life? The goal of this show is to really unpack the idea that having passion is great, having financial success is great, but how do you combine the two and how do you define that for yourself? Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like what you're listening to, hop over, leave a review. If you have any questions, as always, I can be reached at laura@lauraco.com. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. Today we have Matthias joining us. Hey, Matthias, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, Laura, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
I thought it'd be really fun to start our conversation. We were just chatting for a few minutes before we hopped on, and you mentioned something that I thought was so interesting that I'd kind of like to just dive in. A lot of times we start with the history of the person and we'll get to your story, but we're talking about a habit that you have on a weekly basis or, you know, somewhat frequent basis that you ask yourself to figure out what you want in your life and what a life with purpose really means to you. Can you share what you just shared with me? Because I think if I start paraphrasing, I'm going to ruin it.
Absolutely. I'm happy to. I mean, I think some of these words get bastardized by people. You know, you have advertising companies talking about purpose-driven campaigns, and it makes me kind of gag. But I feel that, you know, I am trying to be extremely purpose-driven in how I live my life. And so what that means for me is, like, on a weekly basis, especially when things are difficult, it's back to the question of, like, why am I here? You know, why have I chosen to come in to this, you know, we refer to it as space-time reality, in this human form, in this life, on this planet, in this universe? You know, why am I here? What is it that I'm supposed to be doing with this lifetime? And so that's something I check in with quite frequently. And, like, practically it means, like, sitting down. For me, it's often a conversation with myself facilitated through a notebook and, like, writing out that question. Why am I here? What is frustrating right now? What's getting in the way of trying to do that?
Because we were talking about, like, the things that you've done, and we'll get to it, executive coaching, and now you're working at SY Partners and you have your own platform, and I'm looking forward to diving into all of those different things. But you said there was a common theme about asking yourself this question and then helping people and yourself think about how flexible they can really be and what they can really do, and just shifting platforms and delivering that message.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's for me, it's not like what I do. Like, you ask me, like, oh, but do you do executive coaching? Like, yes, I do that sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's if I'm trying to describe to people what I'm actually doing, it's like, you know, imagine a doctor who's describing, like, then I stick a needle in a bottle and then I do this and then I walk from this ward to the other ward. And it's like, that doesn't really capture what it is. You know, it's on that higher level of, like, a doctor is helping sick patients be healthy again. And, mm-hmm. and I'm helping people. I'm here to help people really shift who they are and not feel that they're stuck in whatever circumstances that they're in, like help people realize how flexible we really are, how much we can change if we want to change, and how we can become who we want to be. How can we know even what we want? All of those things go together, and that takes many different forms. But I'm always looking for the platform to do that from. So some of the things you will see, you know, we talked about this before. You know, I have my own platform called Think Clearly, but I'm not invested in that as like that I need to be building my own company. I've done that a lot, but that's not for me the purpose. I'm not here to build a company. But it's nice to have my own platform, and then sometimes I can ride on other people's platforms, and that's much more impactful. And then that's fine. Like it's not, I'm trying to always remind myself that it's not about me, you know, and it's not about my platform.
And
it's just a platform to do that work.
And I love this because I think that we often get stuck in this more tangible question of what do I want in terms of, you know, specifically the company I want to work in. And I do these mission statements with my clients. And the point of it is really like what you're saying. What is the bigger question, right? Like, I think I really love to solve problems, and solving problems in people's lives, solving problems in technology, solving problems, right? Like, it can be placed in a lot of places. But I really love solving problems with spirituality and philosophy specifically. And so, you know, how do I bring these great ideas out to people? And so when you say, you know, helping people understand how to be flexible, how much they can really change and figure out what they want, then it doesn't really matter where you place it. And you can place it in 10 different places, right? And so I love that you're saying that. I think that's such a great point for people to take home. And so when you say you've done a lot of businesses, I saw in your bio, you founded your first company when you were 15. Were you like one of these like childhood entrepreneurs?
Well, yes and no, you know, because there are childhood entrepreneurs that wanted to build a company. But for me, you know, my childhood was all about building with Legos. And I just wanted to build stuff. And, you know, Legos was cool. Like that was the biggest part of my childhood. But then my uncle taught me software. And software for me was just like Legos, except the crucial thing that it was abundant. You know, Legos is finite. You know, you only have as many bricks as you have.
Mm-hmm.
But software is infinite. You can just write more lines of code. And for me, that was like totally mind-blowing that you could just keep building. There was no kind of upper limit of how big of a thing you could build in software. And that's what I was doing when I was a teenager and the internet became kind of a more normal thing. And then suddenly there were clients that wanted to hire me to help me, to have me help them build stuff on this new internet thing. And so I wasn't really trying to build a company. I was just trying to build Legos or software. And then, you know, the fact that there were adults with budgets and people and skills and things that wanted to play with me, I was like, that's awesome. That means that we can build bigger things and more fun things and collaborate. So,
and when did you realize that really at the heart of what you're trying to build was really building out the ideas that we can change and be flexible and figure out what we want to do and build culture? When did you get fascinated by the idea of how to help people shift and as a sort of core component to your work?
That was a bit later. So there was that kind of building on the internet phase, which was probably about 10 years, and which gave me a lot of experience because it was, you know, like I basically was running a client service businesses at that age and like had meetings with people and budgets and project, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you're working with Google and Bloomberg and Coca-Cola. I mean, your roster is quite extensive.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, back then it was in Denmark. So those companies were while I was here in the US, but still, it was still, you know, for a teenager, it was still big companies. Some of them were in the US and we just had phone calls. And I was, you know, on this boarding school in the middle of the woods in Denmark. But I think back then, again, it was all driven just by fun and learning and not really knowing where it was supposed to go. And I didn't really think about it either. I was just, you know, engaged in the act of building. And I think that's a good place to start sometimes. If you don't know what your purpose is, like if you're, so long as you're having fun and learning, eventually you will figure something out, I think. I think we in this Western world right now, you know, there is all this talk about like your purpose as if it's like one thing that you need to know And if you don't know what your purpose is, then you're kind of a loser, you know? Yeah. And like, I think that's so unfortunate because I think it can also shift. I think what I define as my purpose right now, you know, maybe it'll be 2 years and I've exhausted that in some form or another. And suddenly I may be back in the wilderness and I don't know yet again, like, what is my purpose? And I will have to go on another quest to figure out what the next thing is to do.
Yeah.
So for me, it was 10 years of building and learning and playing. And then it was only after moving to New York that I really had to face that kind of question of like, why am I here?
And why did you feel that you needed to face that question when you got to New York?
For very practical reasons, actually, because that whole business that I had built in Denmark, building stuff, and I'd also been a photographer for a while, it was all like clients that I had collected over that course of time. But they were also very like local based. So when I moved 3,500 miles across the ocean to a different time zone, a lot of that business just didn't really work anymore. Mm-hmm. So after the first year in New York, like it was literally like on my tax return, I was like, I am not paying any tax because I'm not making any money. Mm-hmm. And I had kind of exhausted the savings that I had from Denmark. So it was like, okay, this past business is not working anymore. I need to figure out what to do. And I think I realized I needed to ask for help. And mm-hmm. I began asking for help. So that's how it got started.
So this question, right, plagues people. What do I want? What do I do? What are my next steps when the thing I'm doing isn't working anymore? And I agree with you, right? This absolute obsession with finding purpose and not being able to move forward into anything until I answer that question is so stifling. But when you found yourself in this position, you're in New York, you don't know what to do, you run out of money, how do you start to answer that question?
Yeah, that's a great question to ask. I mean, I think the real shift for me was in some of the helpful advice that I got from people that I was, you know, asking for help. They said, well, Matthias, you've done a lot of things. But which of these, all these things or other things, like what is it actually that you want to do? And for me, that was actually a new way of looking at it even. Like until that point, I had just been playing with one thing, leading to another thing, very kind of like just responding to opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so there were lots of opportunities now, and I could seize many of them potentially. But it was a different problem now because it was a problem of choice. And so I think it was actually deep in that sense that it was like, yeah, what do I actually want? And then, you know, the first stumbling block I realized was that it's sometimes hard to answer the question, what do you want, if you're at the same time putting a limit on it, which is, well, what is possible? So the first thing I had to kind of find a way to circumvent was that kind of resistance of the mind to imagine things that seem impossible or improbable.
Yes, because first of all, I just want to pause and say you went from opportunity to opportunity and then it became a problem of choice. I love that. I swear to God, I'm going to put that all over when this episode goes live because that's such a real thing. I mean, we are in such a state of abundance and, you know, we follow opportunity after opportunity after opportunity and we come out of the gate in our 20s and we're hungry and starving. But it's really just chasing after the things showing up and you're just happy to get it. But at some point when you start to say, what am I choosing? What do I want?
Yes.
I find that I've spent 3 years. I've never been more irritated in my life than trying to answer that question. And this is why I try to help my clients. It's so difficult. And so I love your first response, the limitation, right? Mm-hmm. The limitation of the mind saying, well, I can't say what I want anymore. I have to talk about what's really realistic. Isn't that the biggest trap we fall in?
It's definitely one of them. I think it's definitely a big one of them. And it's surprisingly easy, I find, to then overcome once you realize it. But it's definitely like for all the work I've been doing with, you know, everything from teenagers to CEOs. That's definitely a big stumbling block.
So what is the way to overcome it? Because as quickly as you say, it's actually not that hard. People are out there, I'm sure, going, okay, please tell me the answer.
Yeah. Well, there's a little bit of diagnostics in like figuring out what are those blocks more specifically in terms of like what is it that you feel is the limiting thing in terms of what's realistic. So is it time or is it money or some kind of resource or network or skill or whatever it is? And there's a little bit of like work there to figure out like what is it actually that is the limitation. I think for me in that situation, it was primarily feeling a need that I had to answer the question in kind of one full and clear vision of what I wanted. And so letting go of that and saying, no, I can have partial fragments that are potentially even not fully consistent with each other, but that are at least partial fragmented answers to that. That can be a starting point to answering what do I want. So that was at least for me kind of the first step, trying to break it down and say, I don't know the full picture, but what are little things that I do know? Yes. And I knew, for example, at that point that I had been, you know, since I was 15, living my life inside of a cell phone and inside of a laptop, always traveling with a laptop, always obsessing about whether I could get on the internet because I was in client services and I was a one-man show. So if the website that I had built went down, I was the one they would call night or day or whether I was on vacation or whatever. So I was kind of always tethered to these devices, which today are small and sleek and have a long battery life. And back then were just kind of cumbersome and like slow and annoying. And,
yeah.
And it was kind of like a chain around my foot. So I knew in an ideal world, I want to do work that does not involve any screens. I just want paper and pens and people around me and no screen, no computer. That was, you know, not a full vision, but it was a specific one thing.
And what a deviation from what you've been doing. I mean, that's just, you know, literally going from a life of complete digital building to pen, paper, no screens. And I think that's so wonderful to say, I just wanted a starting point. If you're making that big of a change in your life, you do have to start small, right? You have to start with something as small as it's just, I just want to get the screens out of my life. Because that's all the information you may have at this point since you haven't lived a life without screens.
And it's funny now to see, you know, why it's not important whether that vision or that fragment of a vision is turned to reality, because it was a starting point. And what it has turned out to be was that it wasn't about the screens, but it was about the tethering, the fact that I was bound by the screens. So today I still work with lots of screens, but there's rarely a moment where I can't just leave them behind if I want to. So I use them because I want them, and I use them for proactive things where I am an actor, but I very rarely have to respond to things. I have very few things that critically depend on me being connected to the internet and responding to requests from other people. I'm very rarely in those situations. So in that sense, I have fully achieved it without actually getting rid of any space.
So the point is to anybody listening out there, if you're stuck wanting to make a change, asking yourself the dreaded question, what do I want? And the block comes up and it's like, I need more time. I need more money. I need more resources. Or you have a specific sentence that you're saying in your case, right? Like, I have to figure out the whole vision before I can start anywhere. Knowing what that is, and then taking small steps, and then recognizing as you take small steps, you may shift it slightly.
Yeah.
I was like, I never want to be in a business again. I owned a business for 10 years. I was like, I'm done with business, but I'm actually running a little business again. I didn't feel that way. I just didn't want to run a large brick and mortar business again. Right. But I was overcompensating for.
Yeah,
that's such great advice. So you start answering that question, you take small steps, and you find yourself building up a client list, working as an executive coach at that point. Is that right?
Yeah, basically like an executive coach, but for startup CEOs, because those were the people that were in my kind of immediate surroundings. Those were the people that I had asked for help in figuring this out. And when I began answering, you know, this is what I want to do, this is how I want to work, I don't know exactly what it is, but I was kind of describing the loose outline. One of those people, who is now a very dear friend of mine, Fabian, he was like, I don't think I understand what you do, but I think I want to hire you and just figure it out. And so, you know, he saw an opportunity. He heard something that was like, I don't know fully what this is, but it's, you know, from a place of probability, I think he was like, the probability that this is going to be really valuable compensates for the fact that there's no certainty whether it will actually work out. So like he made a bet on that, and he was running two different companies at the time. So first he hired me for one of them, and then shortly after he hired me for the other one. So he was my first two clients.
That's awesome. That's such a great story.
And then it kind of just got rolling from there.
But again, I think it brings home this message that if you have a starting point and you start to talk about it, like opportunities can start to show up. I hate this whole idea that, you know, if you understand your passion, like the secret, right? Things will start coming, the universe will give it to you. It's like if you actually get out there with it and you interact with real people and you start talking to people, then this stuff can start to happen. I think that message has gotten so skewed that you can actually just sit in your house and opportunity will come to you or something.
Yeah. No, and that's how it's often portrayed in fiction, but it's like one of my favorite books is Richard Bach's Illusions, the guy who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, but his second book, which is for me infinitely better. You know, in that book, you know, they're also talking about this like the secret, like magnetizing and imagining things and making them come into being. And for me, it's not a metaphysical act of just imagination, but it's all the little actions also that you take. But it's sure, like it starts with imagination.
Yes.
But it's just not all that it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you've also built this a platform Think Clearly, which I want to talk about, because when I saw your site, I was just blown away by the quality of design and effort and really like love that you've put into this. Can you talk about Think Clearly, what this product is and, you know, what people can expect to get when they go there?
Yeah, sure. So Think Clearly is what came out of doing that consulting work with the startup people for a couple of years. So when I was doing it, again, we started from that place. We were, as I said, like literally getting hired without me even fully knowing what I was doing. But we agreed to begin. And then we began and we worked together and we collaborated. We had all these, you know, some kind of coaching sessions. Some were more like group facilitation things with the co-founding teams or with all the employees. You know, some were very generative in terms of ideas and visions, and others were more planning. But, you know, just always figuring out, like, where is the resistance and how do we overcome it?
Mm.
And so then from all of that consulting work, Think Clearly became kind of the way of, well, how do I make this available to many, many more people in different formats? Because, you know, at that time, I was working with a handful, you know, sometimes 3-4 clients at a time. That's it. So it was like very few people and a relatively hefty price tag per client. So it was for few people. So how could I take those valuable lessons and learnings and discoveries that we were making and kind of abstract them away from the specific client and the specific challenge they had and kind of develop those ideas and share them more broadly? And so the starting point for that was this newsletter that I'm still writing every other week or every third week or something like that. And it's a very simple idea. It was a little bit more elaborate in the beginning, but over time it's just become simpler and simpler. And it's like one page handwritten with a little drawing, a little bit of text, and usually like a question or a way of pondering something. And
yeah,
They're often half-baked and not fully formed. And I kind of like that it's not my repository of amazing, fully fledged ideas, but it's a repository for me and a repository for others of small, half-baked, but clearly expressed kind of gems of ideas.
No, I love it. And if you have a minute, I know you're listening, maybe you're in the car or just the listeners out there, possibly it's hard to get to the internet at this moment, but if you go to thinkclearly.com, there are these little, what do you call, they're little newsletters, but they're the little drawings and they're the cutest things I've ever seen with thoughts behind them. And I'm just, you know, on the site right now and there's a little character And he's saying, I wonder why he won't trust me. And underneath the character, my judgments, my insecurities. And it is so adorable. I feel like anybody could relate to it. And there are these little thoughts. I don't know that I've seen anybody organize self-help conceptual thinking in this way. I think it's really approachable and fun. And is your intention to demonstrate the kinds of thoughts that most of us are having in a way that is less overwhelming, because it feels so approachable to me?
I think that's definitely what has emerged, I would say. So I think it's in this conversation, it's always good to kind of switch back and forth between the perspective I had when I went into it mm-hmm. and the perspective I have now after doing it for more than 3 years.
Okay.
When I went into it, I didn't know anything else than, like, I had some ideas, you know, maybe I could share them with in my client work. But one of my clients was like, no, you need to share these ideas broader, you know, or at least for me, like, I want to be the one subscriber for this newsletter that I want you to create. And I was like, okay, there's one person that at least would find this valuable. And I could see the value also in kind of having the repository. And then the reason why it's handwritten and all that, that was purely a practical thing. Again, back to that vision, actually, of like not wanting to spend time on screens.
Yeah.
So I was like, there's no point in typing it up. There's no point in like refining it too much. It's just like, let me make it the way that I feel that my creativity flows best, and then at least radically minimize the amount of time on the screen. So take a photo of it. Actually, in the early days, there was about an hour of Photoshop editing to kind of clean it up a little bit still. But over time, you know, I've reduced that to almost nothing. And now I would say it takes about 5 minutes from when I take the photo on my phone and until it's in the email system and ready to send it out. Like there's almost no screen in that process. And that was the point. Like that was the initial idea. But over time, what I saw sharing these on a gradually larger and larger scale was that people valued that approachability, the simplicity. And I began making the text shorter. I began worrying less about making it, you know, fully fleshed out. I tried to accept, like, you know, if I make them more half-baked, then people can fill in some of the blanks. Or maybe they will even share some of the blanks back with me and I can learn something.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. And I do feel that. I do feel that they're a little ambiguous, which I'm kind of enjoying. It helps me sort of engage too and think about it. And you also have these cool clarity cards and, you know, people can buy those on your site. So one thing that I ask everybody who comes on the show is, what does an authentic life mean to you? Somebody who's thought about this quite a bit, how would you answer that question?
It means...
So many people sigh when I ask that.
Yeah, no, but it's. I think I need to make sure that I answer it from what does it mean for me, and that doesn't mean that's what I think it should mean for anyone else. But this is what it means to me.
Okay.
To me, it means doing every day what I want to do. Mm. I think I couldn't even just keep it to myself and say I am always free to do whatever I want to do. I'm not free from consequences, you know, because other people are also free to do whatever they want to do. And maybe they want to enforce certain consequences on me and my behavior.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, I am free to do whatever I want to do. So I need to know what I want to do. And I need to do that. And I need to remember that I am free to be a responsible father of two kids if I want to. I am free to be an irresponsible father of two kids. If that's what I want to.
Yes.
But if I choose to be a responsible father for two kids, then there are other things that I necessarily also must want to do. Even if I forget sometimes why I'm doing them, I need to connect that back. So getting up at 4 a.m. in the middle of the night to be there for my son because he's crying and there's something he's afraid of or whatever it is, and I would really want to sleep. It's like, no, I don't want to sleep more than I want to be a good father for my son. And so I have to find back to that, like, what is it that I actually want? And then, of course, I want also those actions that go with that. But that's the, of course, it's easier to say this on a podcast sitting here looking at the sunshine than it is to feel it in the middle of the night. But I think that's still the striving in an authentic life. At least, you know, again, I can't speak for other dimensions, but in space-time reality, I think that's a good way to look at it.
I love it. And full circle back to your point of really grappling with that question all the time. What do I want? Right? Mm-hmm. Because ultimately it's always shifting. We're always changing and getting in touch with that because it drives our daily decisions. And one question though, like you said, I mean, things sometimes are stressful. You're up in the middle of the night. Things aren't going the way you want them to go. How do you stop yourself from making, I'm sure you make the inauthentic choices sometimes, but how do you stop yourself from saying, I'm not going to get up. Screw my kid. I'm sleeping. Like going against that authentic self when life piles on.
I think the main thing is the whole expectation that we have all these expectations that things should go in some way, you know, that whole, like, it should be this way, or I shouldn't be doing this, or I'm too qualified for this job and I shouldn't be this. And it's more than anything, it's the expectation that is the problem and not the thing itself. Mm. And also my expectation of myself, again, what it means to be the best dad that I can possibly be, that is still limited by my own abilities. And that means that there will be times where I will snap at my son or at my daughter or at my wife because I am not able to connect why I'm doing what I'm doing to the frustrating situation that I'm in. And so, you know, this is again, now we're not talking about what I'm good at, but at least what I'm aware that I need to practice more,
yeah,
is the self-kindness, you know, and accepting that the best version of myself is not always good enough for what I want it to be. And that's okay. That's part of how we're growing, that we have higher expectations than we can fulfill. And we can realize that we didn't fulfill our expectation, but instead of getting stuck in the beating ourselves up over the fact that we didn't reach it, you know, feel the disappointment, recognize it, and then also be able to move on and say, you know, I can maybe do better, but also accept, like, we all have limits.
Yeah.
We all have limits. That is, again, maybe there are other dimensions of life in different, you know, in four dimensions. I don't know where spiritual souls don't have limits. But I think one of the things we choose when we choose to come into form as a human in space-time is that there are limits. And we have limits, the Earth has limits, and some of them we can overcome, but there are always limits. That's kind of the play that we're engaging in, playing with those limits.
Absolutely. And I don't know, you know, The Four Agreements is one of my favorite books, but he talks about, you know, doing your best. And I was reading it, I'm like, wow, this is pretty basic. But when I read what he was saying, that every day your best might not be the same, and recognizing that, you know, when I wake up and I've had plenty of sleep and I've exercised, and it, like, that could be a different best than if I have a cold that day and I didn't get any sleep, right? Like, so that forgiveness that you can't always be some ideal version of yourself, right? That's very, yeah, such a powerful point. So you mentioned a daily practice, or at least, you know, somewhat frequent practice of checking in with yourself and asking yourself about the purpose of your life and what you're here to do. And what other practices or habits do you have to stay in an authentic space?
A lot of it revolves around a similar form, like not necessarily the question of why am I here, because sometimes that, you know, that's clear enough to me, but still reflecting on my own reactions to things that happen around me, or thinking through stuff, reflecting on myself. And again, like let me see if I can find some example here in my book. Like even just this morning, you know, I had a big client project yesterday with a different client than here at SY Partners. And it was kind of like a very, like, immersive, full-on thing. And so it required a little bit of restart to kind of get started on this day back in this environment. And so the note here in my book, I can read here, it starts, restart, period. Full focus on Hyper Island yesterday. Went well. Great energy. Like, just like even just easing into the day by writing through what happened, you know, yesterday, How did I feel about it? And again, what am I going to do today? Like planning a little bit. And it, some of it is very tactical. Like just, this is what I'm going to do today. And it's not, again, that's not super philosophical, but it's a ritual nonetheless, so that I'm not just, I was listening to one of your other guests that also talked about this on the, like you can respond to the thing that is immediately in front of you, like your email, and you can spend all day responding to email and then people respond to your emails and you get emails back and then you can spend the rest of the night responding to those responses. And it right. just, you know, goes on and on and on and on.
Yes.
You know, it's like the closest we have to kind of the samsaric kind of endless loop. but I think for me, this is the practice of just sitting down with and picking tools that don't have an agenda on me and that are not, that don't have notifications and things they push in my face.
Absolutely.
And picking a tool where I am the actor, where it doesn't act until I do. And so if it takes me 2 minutes to begin writing or 5 minutes, the tool will wait for me. And I will eventually begin imagining and creating, first in writing or in little pictures, the day that I want for myself. And yeah. then I'm more likely, no guarantees, but I'm, you know, in terms of probability, I'm more likely to actually have that day and do those things that, you know, were the things that I wanted to do.
Yeah, it sounds, I mean, the word that comes to mind is intentionality, right? Instead of
yes.
in a sort of a reactive loop that spins through your whole day. And yeah. I think a lot of people feel their life is just a big reaction to the next thing, to the next thing. But you do always have the ability to get off that hamster wheel and pull back and decide once again how your energy is going to be spent, what you're going to do. Take control back of the conscious decisions in your days.
Yeah. And you may not be free from consequences of making that, like stopping the hamster wheel. There might be people that scream at you or complain at you or tell you that they had to suffer because you didn't deliver your part. All these consequences you will have to deal with also. But you're always free to do it. And then you will have to deal with those consequences as well. And that's a choice. And sometimes we choose to keep running in the hamster wheel because we don't want to disappoint other people or mm-hmm. whatever it is. But it's a choice we can make.
Yes, yes. And I have to say, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like there are a handful of things in a week where I may really disappoint because I had, you know, I like to keep up my end of the bargain in a work situation or in a relationship. But so much of it is, you know, getting back to that email quickly enough. It's good enough most of the time. Most of the time we're putting an expectation on ourselves that is unnecessary. You know, liking 10 more things on Facebook wasn't really needed in that moment.
Yes.
So do you have other daily practices that you bring into your life that you could share with the audience?
Yes, I think... I mean, just like the like making the day, you know, by writing it out, I think there's a slightly deeper practice that is also frequent for me, which is, you know, it's the similar form, writing in a notebook and like reflecting on things. But it's about realizing what are my beliefs? What is it that I believe to be true? What are the assumptions that I make about the world? Well, you could also, like some people say, like, you know, what are the narratives that I tell about myself and about the world? And that we live in a world that has a lot of narratives that we take in. A lot of them we learn in school. This is how the weather works. We learn that in our geo class, you know, or science class. And so we can take in all these narratives, but we don't have to believe them. We can rewrite some of those if they are the limiting things in getting us to do and be who we want to be. So a lot of my, it's also like writing out, well, what is actually the underlying implicit belief? And it's not easy to see it right away, but we can, you know, I can ask myself that question and begin teasing out, like, I believe that, again, it could be anything from how rain works to how value is created. So for example, in my work now, you know, there's a culture here where it's work is about being productive. And so sometimes when I'm sitting there and not feeling so productive because I'm pondering something or creating something that doesn't exist and it requires imagination, it doesn't feel very productive. And I can feel a little bit like an outsider because the nature of the work that I am doing is, yeah, doesn't look the productive way where people have their headphones on and they're like typing really fast.
Right.
And then I can realize like, oh, it's because I have implicitly kind of been exposed to a pervasive belief that your value of your contribution is determined by your level of productivity. Great. So that's why I'm frustrated then. Like that's why I feel that I'm inadequate right now, because I've created this expectation of myself that I need to be, you know, quote unquote, productive. But I can rewrite that and say, no, value can be created in many different ways. And there are types of work that require imagination where productivity is not the most important thing. And I can appreciate that there are people around me that have different types of work and where that matters. But I don't need to take on that belief.
Right. No, that's so important. And so somebody, I mean, what you're suggesting, though, does require peeling back the onion multiple times. How do you suggest somebody approach themselves? So they're frustrated, they feel something's off, right? And so you start to ask, well, what is it? What's the belief? How do you get to the, oh, it's because I believe productivity means this, but in fact, I actually need imagination right now?
Yeah. I would probably suggest, like with as with any good learning thing, like sometimes start with something that's easier, and don't try to solve the moment when you are frustrated and like things are going down. But do it as a curious practice on a day where you're feeling good, and like just ask yourself and look around and see what are the kind of cultural narratives that I see around me. You know, sometimes it's easier to see them in other people at first. This person is acting this way. What is it that they believe? And then see, do I also believe that? Where is that belief coming from? And even like, you know, it can be quite fun to do on a kind of absurd way almost and say, well, right now, again, like I love rain because it's something that we feel is so out of our control. It's like it's something that we're totally like the victim of. Rain happens when cloud formations move in this way.
Right.
But what if I believed something else? What if I believed that rain could be controlled by me if I do this specific gesture with my hand? What would I do then? How would I act day to day if I actually had the power to control the weather? And what kind of sub-beliefs maybe do I need for that belief to not go completely against the perceived reality? So, for example, I like to imagine that I can control the rain, but that because I haven't practiced that much, I'm maybe not as precise. So when I do this hand gesture, I'm sure that it starts raining. I just haven't learned how to control exactly where on Earth that it starts raining. But I'm sure that there is a place on Earth where it starts raining right now. So it's absurd, but it's a good place to practice, because then you're having fun with it and you kind of stretch your, again, your imagination and your way of being a little bit. And then you can begin applying it maybe to more practical situations than making rain.
Right. That's so funny. I mean, but you know, this is how we started. Like kids are actually willing to say, I think I just made it rain. Right. And of course they're not. And we know that as adults that maybe it did rain somewhere to your joke, but it didn't rain right here. But it somewhere along the line, we got too practical and too serious and too quote unquote, like knowledgeable about how everything is. And we've lost our ability to stay open and flexible and see the world in different ways. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even like when you say, you know, we know that they didn't do that, I would still say like for me, the practice, like, no, we need to remain flexible. So a more precise way would be to say, we have as adults chosen to believe that this is not how it works. But it's a choice we've made. We've chosen to believe that this is not how it actually works. It's no more actual than anything else. It's all like we choose to believe things because it helps us, because it is fun to believe, because it is part of our social norms, and people would think that we would be weird if we didn't believe it. But at the end of the day, it's a choice, and we can choose to believe whatever we want to believe. And I think that's there's a precision in our language and how we think of things where so easy to get caught up in like reality is this thing, and that again that's where a lot of the beliefs actually can be hard to see, because we take them so for granted, they're so obvious to us. So if when you're looking for beliefs, you have to ask yourself, like, what's obvious to me? And that's where your beliefs are hiding behind that kind of the veil of obviousness.
Yeah, wow. You're really sparking my early years of philosophy and epistemology, the idea that maybe that like nothing we really know is, you know, we don't know anything, right? A lot of philosophers would say that we actually never know anything. And behind this idea that you're bringing up, which is actually, you know, a really complex one, but it's letting go of the idea of knowing anything and staying open to anything, because reality is always shifting and moving. And the constructs that we've all agreed to are just constructs that we've agreed to. It's not necessarily true. And it drives the science people crazy. So everybody out there that's a science-based person, they're like, what? There's scientific evidence. But the scientific evidence is something we've agreed to prove things. And often what they've found to be true is not true 10 years later.
Yeah. Or at least it's, and it's also like to qualify again what it means that it is true. It is true because it is useful and because it is internally consistent with the apparatus that makes the proof.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, for an adult, that's a pretty legitimate reason to say that it's true. But that doesn't mean that we can't choose to believe something that most people would believe is untrue. We can still choose to believe it and act as if, and then it becomes, to some degree at least, real for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think your point is to be more playful and allow the endless opportunities and options in the world to be a little more flexible. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the next adventure for me is very much like, now I feel like I can do this on an individual level and even kind of in a one-off or like short-term group thing. But I'm super curious. It's like I can almost see it as like my next phase. It's like, how do I influence an organization? Like, for example, here at SY Partners, how can we make this an institutional thing that we approach life and work from this same place? Like that's I feel, like my next frontier. How do we make it a system that does it and not just Matthias as a crazy person in the corner writing in his notebook?
How do we make Plato's cave parable a real thing?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the show. This is just incredible information. If people want to hear more about you and your work, where can they find you?
Yeah, so they can find me on Think Clearly. I spell it without the vowels. So it's thnkclrly.com. That's also my social handle. So if you reach me on Twitter or Instagram, my Instagram mainly has photos of my kids, but they're cute and adorable. But I will respond to things because I'm very interested in engaging with other people, and especially if you have specific questions or challenges, always feel free to just reach out to me in a form that makes sense to you.
Awesome, and thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your incredible story.
Thank you so much, Laura.